Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for coming to this first segment in the two-part series on Halacha, Hashkafa, the current views of the Torah community with regard to some of the newest issues, cutting-edge issues in medical science. The sciences advance, and that's a very great thing because there are possibilities for people who are seeking answers to fertility challenges that never existed. And today it's become very promising, even for couples who have otherwise, or would otherwise in the past, have had severe difficulty in ever having their own child. And yet, the halacha needs to and does address all of these challenging issues. None of them remain without answers, and there are great poskim and great Jewish minds, halachic minds, and to the credit of the medical arts, great Jewish doctors who likewise are well versed in and very helpful when it comes to the practical solutions to these problems in fertility. This evening we have the pleasure of hearing from Rabbi Tzvi Flam, who's an expert in medical ethics. Our community has been blessed with his guidance in so many different ways, and he is a teacher par excellence, a great, great scholar, a Talmud Chacham, who our community really embraces and who our shul specifically knows well through many, many good years of fine and meaningful relations with Rav Flam and with his work. We also have Dr. Eddie Reichman, who also has been in our shul numerous times and has presented shiurim specifically at one of our Shabbos Minyanim, and who has also been a scholar in residence with us in years past. So without further ado, addressing issues in abortion and stem cell research, I'd like to call upon first Rav Tzvi Flam and then Dr. Reichman.
Shus, the distinguished Mar Da'asra, Harav Teitelbaum Shlita, I want to thank you for inviting me, as well as Dr. Reichman, into your Dalai Lamos to be able to participate in this important adult education series. The topics that I and Dr. Reichman will be discussing tonight are perhaps the latest high-tech topics you have in the world of medical ethics today, and that is the question of the permissibility, according to Torah law, even according to non-Jewish B'nai Noach law, when it comes to utilizing embryonic stem cell research. And the reason we're posing this shayla is because in stem cell research, what a stem cell is, just as a little hakdama, is the initial building blocks when the sperm and egg meet in the fallopian tube, an actual conception takes place, and the cell starts to undergo cell division. Within about 4 days, as it goes down the fallopian tube and finally comes into the uterine area and connects to the uterine wall, that cell that's been created by this specific form of fertilization is called a totipotent stem cell. Stem cells are the building blocks of the human body. This specific stem cell creation in the blastocyst stage has the capacity of creating the entire human being from top to bottom, every organ system inside and outside, and also creating the placenta and the other connective tissue to facilitate the gestation of the embryo and ultimately the fetus and the baby. And this specific technology, when they get the blastocyst stage, the fact of the matter is, we're not talking about the blastocyst that's in the body. We're talking about a situation in which, basically speaking, you had in vitro fertilization where the egg and sperm were harvested and they were combined in a laboratory setting and were grown in this test tube for 5 days or such to the point to reach its blastocyst stage. The inner cell mass of this specific blastocyst in the body, when this takes place inside the body, is what produces all the organ systems of the body. The outer part of the blastocyst, the actual cell ring, is what produces the connective tissue, the placenta, and other types of tissue which connected to the mother for its nutrition and for its maintenance during the 9 months of gestation. So what science has been able to do or try to do is replicate what the Rabbeinu Shem does automatically in the body. If the inner cell mass develops all the organ systems in every body type, of the 200 body types in the body, naturally based upon the way Hashem programmed the cell, science said, why not try to take this blastocyst before you put it into a body, take it apart, take out the inner cell mass, and in a laboratory setting, differentiate these cells and develop the cells that you should be able to make the various tissues that the body makes automatically in a laboratory setting for the purposes of two things, which later on Dr. Reichman is going to go into a medical arichus. But the kitz and imaratz, what we want to do is perform what's called cell therapies. A person has a sick cardiac situation, a person has cardiac tissue that basically is deteriorating. If you can create from this inner cell mass cardiac tissue in a laboratory, you can then perhaps, based upon the theory, reintroduce these new stem cells, which are cardiac cells, into the body to replace the sick, dying cells, which will then help the heart cure itself and quite obviously facilitate the heart to be healed without having to do anything of any major medical surgical phenomenon. Dr. Reichman will discuss tonight the possibility, which we're going to have shortly, I can't say how shortly is, of 3D imaging, to be able to create hearts, actual physical organs, but I'll let him as a doctor discuss with you when it comes to a medical level. Imagine creating a heart this way with cells of stem cells to replace your heart. You won't need people to die and have problems whether they're dead according to halacha to harvest the heart and to replace their sick one if you can create artificial ones made with human tissue in a laboratory. Tonight in particular, I asked Dr. Reichman to discuss the concept of somatic subnuclear transfer, in which medical science now has or potentially has the capacity to be able to take not just somebody's sperm and egg, but to be able to basically, when it comes to in vitro fertilization, to take what's ever left there from the prezygotes and to do this technology. But we have the potential capacity to take a person's own skin cell, which is called the somatic cell, to harvest its nucleus, to take an egg that's been denucleated, where the nucleus has been taken out, to combine the nucleus of your actual skin cell with the egg cell in laboratory procedures. If the egg proceeds at that point in time, it's undergone fertilization, conception, it starts to cell divide, becomes blastocyst stage. You take out the cells, the inner cell mass. These are identical cells to the person from who the specific somatic cell is taken from. If you're able to do that successfully, you can create cardiac tissue from this phenomenon that's identical with the tissue from the person it's taken from. That will prevent the need of having to have anti-immune drugs administered to the patient, which will be a major breakthrough when it comes to medical science. I'm going to stop the science over here because Dr. Reichman is going to take over at that point in time. But the big problem with this science, which I'm going to deal with halakhically, is the following. There is a good group of people on the face of this planet, led by the Roman Catholic Church, that don't want us to pursue this type of scientific research, specifically embryonic stem cell research, because of the following claim. They claim when you take the blastocyst in the laboratory and you tear it open to harvest the inner cell mass to do this type of technology, you're taking a blastocyst, which ultimately will have the potential, if it was implanted into the body, to develop and gestate into an embryo fetus. They claim when you break it and you destroy it in the laboratory to take out the cell mass to do this technology, you're committing the terrible crime of abortion. And that's why the Roman Catholic Church and many of the church parts of the world who adhere to this specific prescription assert embryonic stem cell research. And what I want to do tonight is deal with the following question. I want to define halach lamasa, what is abortion in the world of Torah law for Jews and Torah law for Bnei Noach for non-Jews. Number two, what I want to do is discuss the importance of the preservation of fetal life, with this tremendous confusion exactly what that means when it comes to pikuach nefesh or babies in utero. And ultimately come to the halachic question, after I make my presentation, whether or not what's happening in harvesting this specific stem cell, the blastocyst, and cutting it open, is this abortion according to Jewish law, to Bein Noach law? You'll hear when I get to it, and you'll understand why I'm doing this, because the best consumer is a knowledgeable consumer. And especially if your doctor is involved in the medical profession, and people are asking you opinions, what's your opinion, doctor? And they expect doctors, especially religious doctors, to have the answer to everything on all religious matters. You'll have the information at your fingertips to give them a logical answer to be able to answer this query. Let me go to the beginning. The ease of abortion. The ease of abortion is mentioned in the Torah. And what's interesting and fascinating, the church says there's an ease of abortion, but I once had a discussion with one of the great professors in St. John University, one of the great Roman Catholic professors. I said to him, the church says it's prohibited. Show me the passage in the Bible that says this. And believe it or not, he had tremendous difficulty telling me what the passage is, and the fact at the end of the day, he really didn't know what the passage. They just have a Kabbalah that this is prohibited. So what I revealed to him that in that discussion is that there is a pasuk in the book of Bereishis, in Parshas Noach, with the Rabbanu Shlomo upon Noach and his children emanating from the Teva, gives an entire lecture on the severity of the prohibition of murder. And in that specific parsha, the following pasuk appears. The pasuk says, Shofech dam adam adam dam yeshafech, ki betzelem elokim ases adam. Whoever sheds the blood of a person in a person, his blood should be spilt. Man is created in the image of God. This pasuk is taken by the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin in Yomar Mekamos. Is quotation I on the right hand side of the page where you have the asterisk. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Darshan is what's an Adam Besech Adam? A person in a person is referring to an embryo, a fetus in the body. And what God is saying according to this pasuk, talking to the Bnei Noach, that you can't commit abortion by killing a body in a body, nefesh b'nefesh. This is the Makar according to Halacha for Bnei Noach. In the Issa of abortion, which is an Issa deraisa. For Bnei Noach, I want you to know that this is such a severe prohibition that for Bnei Noach, if they do commit an abortion, they're chayiv mises bezdin, like all the other Shiva mitzvot. If they basically do any of the Shiva mitzvot violation, they're chayiv mises bezdin. This is included under that rubric. Some say it's a separate Issa, some say it's subsumed under the Issa of Ritzicha, which is one of the Zayim mitzvot. But it's biblically prohibited from a guy from this specific pasuk. Adam ba'adam is the makar. Now this pasuk is addressing the non-Jewish world. What is the source for the Jewish world? So Rav Auerbach Zatzal, the great Gadol Hador of the past generation, says, we have a principle in the Torah, mi'i kemida, is there a phenomenon that for a guy should be asr and a Jew should be mutter, or vice versa? We don't have such categories. There's usually whatever's asr for a guy is asr for a Jew. So he says, based upon Mika Mida, there's no question in his mind. And he quotes two Tosis, and one in Chulin and one in Nida, that there's an Isa deraisa for a Jew to commit the prohibition of abortion. But ironically, if a Jew does it, he's not Chayiv Mises Bezin Shamata. What he's Chayiv for, I'll discuss very shortly, but it's a different nature of Isa when it comes to a Jew doing it when a guy does it. And why there's such a differential, I'll explain in the next couple of minutes. So the first thing I want to mention is abortion is prohibited. There's no question. In a Torah for a Jew and for a guy. Now, the question arises, for Bnei Noach, the Pashas of the Pasuk is, it appears for them it's a form of Shvichas Adam, because that's what the Gzeres Kasef says. What is the nature of the Iser when it applies to a Jew? So concerning this, there is a Machlokis Rishonim, the Rambam on one side and Rashi on the other side. In Yomar Mekomos is quotation B and C on the top of the page. And what they're arguing about is the interpretation of a Mishnah on top of the page. There's a Mishnah, Masechtas Olos, that tells us, based upon Torah Shabbat Peh, that as severe as the Issa of abortion might be, the Rabbanu Shalom gave us a Makar Torah Shabbat Peh, that when a mother's life is at stake, there is a permissibility in the Torah to perform a therapeutic abortion. You're allowed to kill the baby to save the mother's life, as long as the baby has not emanated from the mother's body, as long as parturition hasn't taken place, as long as the crowning hasn't taken place, the mother's life under normal conditions supersedes the baby. So therapeutic abortion is permissible according to halacha when it comes to Jewish law. Now, the question is, what is the rationale behind this? Why do we assume the mother's life takes priority over the baby? So the Mishnah seems to indicate the mother is called a nefesh, and the baby seems, in size, not really called a full-fledged nefesh. Therefore, she has an adifus, a greater concept of chayim, that her should be perceived, basically, more important than that of the baby inside. The Rambam and Rashi have an argument. What is the underlying motif of the permissibility of basically killing this baby in this therapeutic abortion? If I didn't have a therapeutic abortion, what would be the iser being violated in a non-therapeutic abortion when it comes to a Jewish person? The Rambam, interesting enough, in the quotation B, says in order for us to justify a therapeutic abortion for a Jew, we have to use a special rule which the Gemara has in Masechta Sanhedrin called the Din of Rodeth, the Din of Pursuit. And what the Rambam says, when the baby inside is threatening the mother's life, the baby is a pursuer of the mother's life. As being a pursuer, Rodeth, the mother's life, if that's the case, the baby is the Rodeth and the mother is the Nirdeth, the one being pursued. And Torah Shabbatah teaches us, based upon Pesukim in Chumash, that when you have a Rodef basically pursuing a Nirdef, you can kill the Rodef to save the Nirdef. The Rabbim uses that logic, therefore we can come in and, as outsiders, third-party observers, kill the baby in utero to save the mother's life. The law of pursuit is the Matir. So according to the Rambam, all the Gedolei HaPoskim who analyzed the Rambam, going back to the time of the Nodi Yehuda, later on Rab Chaim of Brisk, later on Rav Moshe Zatzal and Artikufa, said if the Rambam is using Rodef to justify killing the baby even under therapeutic usages, it must be for one reason. The most probably killing the baby when there's no therapeutic phenomenon is a form of Ritzicha. And therefore, to matter the Ritzicha of the baby to save the mother's life, Rodef is a matter in Ritzicha to kill the Rodef to save the Nirzach from being killed by the pursuer. If Rodef is introduced, it appears that killing the baby out of therapeutic care is basically a concept of murder, Ritzich according to Torah law, and Rodef's used to justify this specific activity. And therefore, Halach Lamas, I want you to know, that based upon their interpretation, the Noda Behuda, later on Reb Chaim held this in his famous Ksavim and his Perish on the Rambam, and later on Moshe Paskin, this Halach Lamas in his Igros Moshe, they look upon, therefore, termination of a Jewish birth when it comes to abortion with non-therapeutic value as being a form of Ritzicha, and therefore you have to treat it with that type of severity, Kovid Harosh, and therefore only if the mother's life is at stake does the Din Rodef come in to matter that Ritzicha. Rashi, however, on his interpretation of this Mishnah, has a different interpretation. And what Rashi says very simply is, the mother who's giving birth to this baby is a nefesh. The baby inside the mother, until the baby's born, is not a nefesh. The baby inside the mother's body is an actuality. Uba yerach imo is an organ system of the mother's body, and is identified as an organ system until the baby's born and separates, and undergoes parturition, becomes a separate entity. So therefore, according to Rashi, if a part of a human being's body is threatening their life, if an organ system is threatening a person's life, you're allowed to perform emergency surgery to cut out the organ to save a person's life. If Uber is a Yerech Imo, is part of the mother's body systems, and it's threatening her life, I perform the emergency surgery, the baby is not a nefesh, it's part of the mother's body system, and that's the matter when it comes to the din of therapeutic abortion, according to Rashi. Now if you think about this for a couple of minutes, this is the two major machlokes. According to Rashi, I just quoted, destroying the baby inside is not ritzicha, even when it's not therapeutic. According to Rashi, you kill the baby inside without therapeutic purposes, it is ritzicha. That's a major polar machlokes. So the question now arises, for Shitas Rashi, if I do destroy the baby without therapeutic reason, what isa am I violating? If Uba Yerach Imo, and I destroy the baby just because I want to destroy the baby, what violation according to Torah law am I violating? So there's a machlokes poskim between the Marit, Rav Trani, and the Chavis Yor, Rav Bachrach. Both Gedolim who lived approximately late 1600s, early 1700s. What's the machlokes? The Marit, Rav Trani said, Ubi Yerechimo, if I therefore destroy the baby out of the context of therapeutic saving the mother's life, I'm performing the Isa Derais of Chovam, doing a Chabala. If I cut the mother's body outside, inside, without a medical purpose, it's an Isa Derais of Chabala. So therefore, without a therapeutic reason, I'm being Chovam Begufa, I'm destroying one of her organ systems. That's the Shita of the Marit. It's not Ritzicha, it's Chabala. According to Rabakar, he says, no, I hold that besides that, there's another Isa. Since the baby was created initially from the sperm and egg of parents, if that's the case, if you destroy the baby in utero without a therapeutic reason, you're violating the Isa of Hashchasa Zera, destroying Zera, and that's the way he basically paskets. So we therefore have now two camps of thought, the Rambam camp, as well as the Rashi camp, concerning the question of how is the Isa of abortion looked upon in the eyes of Halacha for Jews. For the Rambam, it's a form of Ritzicha, not punishable by Bezdin and Shalmata, only punishable by Bezdin and Shalmaila. For a Ben Noach, Halach Lamasa, it's a Ritzicha that's punishable by Bezdin and Shalmata. If you'll ask me the question, why is there a difference? One reason given by the Mizrahi for the difference, if both are Ritzicha, is that Jews have a special Halacha in adjudicating court cases and capital punishment, which Shkaim don't have. To adjudicate a capital case in Torah law for a Jew, you need Hasra. If you don't give Hasra to the person who's committing the Aveir, you can't basically chayv the Mises Bezdin. For a Ben Noach, the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin, they don't need Hasra. So if that's the case, since you can't give what we call 100% Hasra to a baby in utero because you don't know if the baby's going to be viable, the Hasra therefore prevents being chayv a Jew, Mises Bezdin, but if a Ben Noach that doesn't need it, he basically can be Chai Mises Bezdin. That's the Mizrahi explains the differential in the cases. But according to the Shitas Rashi in his group, the halacha is that as far as he's concerned, a non-therapeutic abortion is an Isa of either Chabala, as the Marit says, Hashchas Zera, as the Chavis Yar says, which is a much lighter prohibition. In contemporary poskim, I want you to know this has a major impact upon the Tesach's abortion halachos, because since Rav Moshe held non-therapeutic abortion is a shayla for Ritzicha, he will not allow abortion for a Tay-Sachs baby, which is presently not threatening the mother's life, because he says, if it's an Isa Ritzicha, there's no Redifa, there's no Rodif over here, the mother is going to survive the pregnancy, and the baby's not going to die for at least 3-4 years after the Tay-Sachs syndrome kicks in. He therefore disallows abortions for Tay-Sachs babies, because he looks upon the Isa of non-therapeutic abortion as Ritzicha. Rav Waldenberg says explicitly, he looks like the Marit, and the Chavis Yoyer, the Isa of abortion is an Isa of either Chabala or Hashchas Zera. Based upon that, he does not require the mother's life to be in the state of Pekuach Nefesh now in order to matter Chabala or Hashchas Zera. You can do Chabala if there's a medical need, even though it's not the question of Pekuach Nefesh. We do it all the day. Every time a doctor makes any incision in your body for non-life-threatening phenomenon, it comes under Rapi Rapi, it's a Chabala L'Shem Rufua. Since the fear that Rav Waldenberg had, is that it's been shown that many parents over years of dealing with a Tay-Sachs child that's born to them sometimes suffer mental and physical anguish, sometimes develop heart disease, some undergo psychological depression. Some want to even perhaps commit suicide because they can't bear seeing their child disintegrate in front of their eyes. He felt that long-term concern is a tzarech to matter the chabal hashchas zera, and that's why he's making when it comes to abortions of Tay-Sachs children. But the only way you can have this machlokes is if there's a division, what is the severity of abortion if you don't have therapeutic needs of a mother's life being at stake? Well, where all the Rapasans like Rashi is Hashchas Zera and Chabala, and Rav Moshe Paskin like the Shita of the Rambam and those before who held the question of Ritzicha on a Daraisa level, and that's where Rav Moshe is Machmir. So this is the basic concept of the Machlokas of abortion, Bekitz and Nimrats. But now we come to a very important part of the Shir this evening. At what part of the gestational period of the baby gestating the body does the Isa of abortion take place? When is the embryonic develop of the baby looked upon halachically as an embryonic develop of a basic child, that whatever sheet you hold, Rashi or the Rambam, the ease of destruction of this fetus comes into existence. So let me give you what initially is the reaction of the poskim. They point out in the world of halacha, there are a number of areas where halacha deals with what is the halachic status of the baby within the first 40 days of gestation. The Gemara has, for instance, the question of when does a baby who undergoes a spontaneous miscarriage, as called in halacha nefel, at what juncture does it generate tumas hames? Does the din of tumas hames apply? The Mishnah Melech paskins that in order halacha lamasa for a nefel that undergoes spontaneous miscarriage to be a mess, to generate tumah, the gestation had to be at least up onto day 41. Day 41 on, the gestation generates tumas hames. Up until 40 days, including day 40, the Gemara calls it, it's merely mayim, merely a liquidy substance, has no halakhic significance, and therefore the din of tumas hames doesn't apply. So we see 40 days, from 40 to 41, is the crucial period. When it comes to tumas lei, the woman gives birth bezman haTorah, there's a concept of tumas hayoledes. For a boy, she's 27 days, goes to mikvah, 33 days of Dmei Tara. Day 41, she goes and she brings karbanos to the base of Migdash to take away her tumah when it comes to the Migdash. For a girl, she's tamei tumas leida for 2 weeks, 66 days of Yimei Tahara, and day 81, she brings karbanos to allow herself to go back to the base of Migdash and eat karbanos. Tumas leida is based upon a child coming out of her body. How far in advance in the pregnancy does it have to take place for tumas leida to be applicable? So here the Pesach Halach is, if she basically underwent the miscarriage from day 41 on, there's tumas yoledes. If she miscarried in the first 40 days, including day 40, it's mir mayim ba'alma, and halacha lamas is not considered an entity we have to take into consideration. From these two makaris alone, we see that normally in the world of halacha, gestation of a baby in the world of halacha, tumas hames, tumas yoledes, is not recognized until day 41 of gestation. There are many poskim who say if that's the case, when it comes to abortion, the same halacha should apply. That the recognition of the yitzchus havla, the baby's gestation, should not be looked upon as halacha, embryonic development, aser, pateris abortion, until day 41. Rav Achiezer, the Achiezer, poskim that way, the Tzafet and Spaneach poskim that way, and there are many gedolim, and therefore they held halacha lamasa, the east abortion for Jews and goyim don't begin till day 41. Interesting psak of those gedolim. What's interesting is, despite their psak, there's another halacha on the books which poses a problem to them and which arouses the curiosity of Rav Untum in Zatzal and Rav Moshe. On Yomar Mekama, so I'm not going to read with the inside, but I just want to tell you where I'm quoting from. I'm quoting quotation G on the left-hand side of the page. Let me explain to you the shayla. This is a shayla Rabbanim have every Yom Kippur. A woman's pregnant, and the doctor says, I'm afraid, if she doesn't violate the tainus, she might undergo spontaneous miscarriage. So the question which the Ramban quotes, according to Bahar, if the doctors tell a woman, based upon your fragile state, if you don't eat in your early pregnancy, we're fearful that the baby might undergo spontaneous miscarriage. Therefore, the halacha should be, she has to eat to save the baby's life and to maintain the pregnancy. That's the psak halacha that's given. But the question is, what level of gestation and the embryonic development does this halacha apply to? So the Bahag is mentioned by the Ramban as holding that even if the baby is in the developmental state from day 1 to 40, if there's a possibility that the baby's life might be lost by her fasting, for some reason the pikuach nefesh of the baby takes halachic value, and you can force her to eat to save the baby's life within the first 40 days, quoting the Bahad saying this explicitly. So the obvious question is, if in Kolat Tarakul, I just gave you examples, the normal gestation in the world of Allah is not recognized until day 41, so how can the Bahag and the Ramban hold that in the first 40 days when it comes to Pekuach Nefesh, in Chilul Shabbos and Yom Kippurim, we're dealing with Yisuri Kuris and Mises Bez when it comes to Shabbos,
How in the world can you have such a hechter in the first 40 days?
So the chiddush over here, which the Ramban gives, is he points out the following, which is very important for those involved in medicine and Chilul Shabbos when it comes to doctors and to nurses and other medical professionals, is that there's a halach on the books. Pekuach nefesh is doruch Shabbos, Yom Kippur, and all the mitzvahs of the Torah. What's the makar for this? So the Gemara in Masechtis Yoma has two primary makaros. One makar is Asheyas Adam v'chaybem, a pasuk in Afremos, you should do mitzvahs and live by them. And the Torah says, what do you mean live by them? You live by mitzvahs, but mitzvahs should not cause your death. The fact you should live because of mitzvahs and they shouldn't cause your death is there for the makar, that when your life is at stake, because nefesh is doruch, all the mitzvahs of the Torah, except for three, concept of arayas, shvichas dam, and gilei arayas, but besides those three averes chamuras, under normal conditions, all mitzvahs, Shabbos, Yom Kippur, are nitcha because of pekuach nefesh. That's the makkah that the Rambam quotes. That's the makkah which the Mishnah Berurah says in Shin Chaf Tes is the primary makkah when it comes to this halacha. And what that means is, life is absolute, life is of infinite value. The Gemara says, even chayisha, momentary life, is allowed to cause Chilul Shabbos for you to save a person. A person is caught under a building on Shabbos, the Gemara says, in Masechtas Yoma as well. You're able to excavate and take the person out, even though you know they're not going to survive till after Shabbos. Chayisha allows Chilul Shabbos to take place. So that's the primary marker for the mitzvah of Chilul Shabbos itself, being nitka because of Pekuach Nefesh. But what's interesting is the Gemara says in the Masechtas Yoma, there's a secondary source. Of Shomeres HaShabbos, L'Sos HaShabbos, L'Sos HaBaris Olam. What does that Pasuk teach us? So Shimon Manasseh had a Kabbalah. Shomer HaShom is mentioned twice in the Pasuk. Mechalol Shabbos Achas Kedei Sheyishmu Shabbos HaSaryak. You should mechalol the Shabbos now so the person will be saved, will be able to observe Shabbos in the future. So comes along the Chafetz Chaim and he says, that if I pask in the mitzvah Pekuach Nefesh from the second Pasuk, V'Shomeres HaShabbos, then the halach would be if a person had a chayisha problem on Shabbos, and you know they're not going to survive the Shabbos, you couldn't be mechallel Shabbos to save them. Because that's predicated upon saving them now, and be mechallel for future kima mitzvahs. If you have chayisha, that pasuk's not going to be matterit. The Chafetz Chaim therefore says, in the Bi Halach HaShin Chav Tes, that the ikar primary pasuk is the kinds of chayvei l'shim muspehem. Their future observance of the Torah is irrelevant. The crucial factor is the infinite value of human life at that point in time. A newly born baby on Shabbos that's not going to survive the Shabbos. But you can deal with the baby medically on Shabbos until it dies. It has chayisha. According to Chafetz Chaim, based upon the Pasuk Chayil Hashem Musraham, you can basically treat the child until the child dies, even though it's not going to survive the Shabbos or be around in the future. So it seems from the Poskim that the Pasuk, that's the Ikar Pasuk, Chayil Hashem Musraham, comes along the Bahag, and the Ramban quotes this. What is the makar of the Bahag that a baby in the first 40 days, who in all other areas of halacha is considered mayim, a non-substance when it comes to the halacha of abortion, it's not considered an embryonic entity yet, mayim ba'alma. What's the makar that the Bahag passed in the first 40 days? I have a mitzvah to mechal Shabbos to save it. He says it comes from the pasuk Shomer Esrei Shabbos. That in this realm, the Rabban Hashem was mechadish a second pasuk based upon futuristic concerns. If I'm mechalal Shabbos now for the baby in the first 40 days and I save the pregnancy, the child ultimately will be born. That child will become a bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah, shem Torah mitzvahs in the future. So the Torah is mechadish. Mechalal Shabbos now. Kedei sheyishmu Shabbos as habei ba'asit. According therefore to the Bahag, the Bahag says this, the Ramban quotes him, and he passes like the Bahag. That's the makar in Shulchan Aruch. If a woman's told in the first 40 days that your baby's pregnancy is at stake, break the tainus and eat on Yom Kippur. It's the pasuk Shomru, Mechal Shabbos Achas, that gives value to the first 40 days. Think about it for a minute. The actual embryonic development is not Mechayivit. It's Mayi Ba'alma. But the future potential the child has, based upon this Gezeres HaKosev, allows the future development and existence of the child to be used now as the frame of reference, and therefore you mechalal the Shabbos now, even in a non-embryonic state, to give the child chiyus, the ability to live and survive, and literally be Shabbat Tarmis in the future. Peladik HaChidush. If that's the case, what Rav Moshe and Untermann say is, we now see there's a dichotomy between the concept and the yesod of Tumas Leida and the concept of Tumas Ames, that you need 41 days for it to be chal, because that's based upon biological reality. Is it an embryonic entity? If it's an embryonic entity, it's a mess, it generates Tumas Mess. If it's an embryonic entity, the woman gave birth and has Tumas Leida. The Toch Nefesh is a separate halach, it's based upon futuristic concerns, because there's a kasev, it's a separate halach, a separate mechayiv, and therefore there's no contradiction. What I will mention is Rav Moshe and Rav Unterman say, if that's the case, this is important, this only applies to Jews, because the Gezeres HaKasav applies to Jews. For non-Jews who don't have the Pasuk V'Shamru, as far as they are concerned, the mitzvah Pekuach Nefesh of a non-Jewish child is equal to the concept of the 41-day halacha. So for them, the biologic reality of not killing a child before day 41, as far as the B'nai Noach halacha is concerned, there's no Issa for B'nai Noach in the first 40 days. The same way, Tumas Leida would not apply on a Jewish level, nor would Tumas Ames. So therefore, as far as B'nai Noach halacha is concerned, this is the important factor, the first 40 days is nothing according to halacha when it comes to a Ben Noach baby. A Jewish baby which has the actual Gzeres HaKasav of Shomer Esos HaShabbos, there we're giving the first 40 days a special status when it comes to Pekuach Nefesh because of the Gzeres HaKasav. Now, according to this, we therefore see, and I want to summarize the sheet before I go to the next part, is the following. If that's the case, the big heter that people have on the marketplace today of allowing a person to undergo an abortion in the first 40 days, that's the Hamanam has that on the marketplace. So I want to put into perspective who says that and who it refers to. According to the Achiezer and according to the Shita of the Safnis Paneach, Rav Rosen, they're of the opinion that the 41-day rule is a hard, fast rule, and therefore, Allah Lamasa, nothing can be done for this baby in the first 40 days when it comes to the baby, because they hold this Gezeres HaKasav does not apply from day 1 to day 40. They claim it only applies from day 41 on. In the first 40 days, it's Mayib Alma, has no halakhic significance. In their mind, if you say that a woman should break the fast in the first 40 days, it's not the baby's Pekuach Nefesh that they were talking about, but the fact that if the mother miscarries, it might have a negative impact upon her life, her existence, because she might hemorrhage. So therefore, it's the Pekuach Nefesh of the mother that was matter, perhaps saving the baby in the first 40 days. But when it comes to Pekuach Nefesh of the baby and the baby, for them, it doesn't begin to day 41, if I'm making myself clear. I'll say it again. According to the Safnis Paneach and according to the Shita of the Safnis Paneach, the baby in the first 40 days, there's no Tumas Leida, there's no Tumas Mess, there's no Pekuach Nefesh upon it. The Pasuk V'Shomru for them applies from day 41 on. If you say the mother has to break the fast, and as the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, it's the mother's life is in danger, and that's what the matter is. Rav Moshe and Rav Unterman say differently. They claim that when it comes to Tumas Leida and Tumas Ames, day 41 and 40 are the crucial factors. When it comes to Pekuach Nefesh, Halacha Lamasa, there's a special Gzeres HaKasav, which they claim includes the first 40 days, and that's a special matter for Jews. It's not a male matter for non-Jews. Now, if that's the case, comes along Rav Moshe Unterman says, if we hold there's a mitzvah Pekuach Nefesh in the first 40 days to save the baby's life because of the baby, then the logic, therefore, follows, if you have to save the baby's life, you surely can't terminate the baby's life. That's the source, according to Rav Moshe Unterman, since the mitzvah Pekuach Nefesh, they derive the Issa of abortion that you hear in the street that people, when it comes to a Jewish child, can't do anything to the child once conception takes place, even the first 40 days. If there's a mitzvah Pekuach Nefesh based upon the Gzeres HaKasav, the ease of abortion has to kick in because you can't say there's a mitzvah to save it and be allowed to destroy it simultaneously. It's illogical. So that's their shita, but that applies only to Jewish babies. It doesn't apply to non-Jewish. Non-Jewish, the ease begins on day 41. According to the opinion of the Tzafis Paneach and according to the opinion, Halacha Lamasa, of the Achiezer, they're of the opinion, technically speaking, that all of these Isurim and Halachas apply from day 41. The Issa of abortion doesn't begin until day 41. Tumas Leida, Tumas Ames, 41. And if you save the baby in the first 40 days, it's not a baby Halacha, it's a mommy Halacha. Now, the morning after pill is one major question.
who can take a morning after pill if you want to terminate a pregnancy. What I'm telling you now, for B'nai Nalak, according to everybody's opinion, abortion doesn't begin until day 41. So therefore, any pill that causes even an abortion, our terminology, or termination of the pregnancy in the first 40 days for B'nai Nalak, is halakhically negligible. Period. The machlokas, however, with Rav Moshe Unterman on one side, and the Sosmaneach and Achaz on the other side, what about a morning after pill for a Jew? So there, quite obviously speaking, according to Rav Moshe Unterman, the Issa would be there, because the concept of the Issa abortion begins from the minute of conception. According to the Achaz and according to the Sosmaneach, a morning after pill wouldn't be a problem because it doesn't become an abortion until day 41. So the major nafkamin is halakha l'masa. Now this is important when it comes to fetal life, when it comes to the issue of abortion, but all of this now comes to the following reason. I brought this up as a prelude to Dr. Reichman's lecture now. And that is the following. In all the shitas that I quoted, we're talking about one case scenario. The baby is in the body of the mother, in a state of gestation, it's connected through the uterine wall, B'derech HaTeva, the baby's going to grow and gestate, 9 months be born. That's an Adam, B'Seicha Adam. And that's the halacha upon which the Torah prescribed and prohibited the Issa of abortion to take place. Adam, B'Seicha Adam. Whether it's a Ben Noach or it's a B'nai Yisrael. When you are basically performing an in vitro procedure, where in a laboratory you're creating through taking semen and eggs and combining them in a petri dish and growing them with laboratory procedures into blastocyst stage, making them into full-fledged prezygotes. So under normal circumstances, if you're doing this for reproduction purposes, you implant it at that time into the uterus and hopefully the baby will catch on and start developing. But if you don't do that and you keep the baby in a laboratory and they're not going to use it, they usually put it into a deep freeze to keep them preserved for future implantation. Usually when it comes to women who are undergoing fertility treatments, they do supraovulation to make sure they can harvest as many eggs as possible, as many sperm. They try to produce as many prezygotes as they can. Whatever they put in, they put in out to use. The other ones they put into deep freeze for future usage. That's what they usually do. In the in vitro fertilization labs, when they want to do initial stem cell research, people who no longer want to use the frozen prezygotes basically give it over for research. Those are the ones that are being taken out of deep freeze and undergoing defrosting, taken apart, and the stem cell research is being done on these embryonic stem cells. The question is, according to any shita, should there be a shela of abortion by taking the blastocyst and tearing it open to harvest those inner cell mass? What I want to point out to you is whether you're a Ben Noach or a Ben Yisrael, there is no abortion taking place in a test tube outside in a laboratory for two reasons. Number one is, it's not Adam B'Seicha Adam, which is the way the Issa was formulated, a human in human. And there's no way a baby in a laboratory in current technology could ever become a human being. It can't gestate to 9 months. So it can never become a full-fledged human being. The potential for that doesn't exist. That's why when Rav Arbach Zatzal and other Gedolim of that level in Eretz Yisrael asked the Shela, whether the concept of destroying a blastocyst in utero, when it comes to harvesting, is this a question of abortion for Jew and non-Jew? The unanimous opinion of the Gedolim who dealt with this was, this is not an abortion, it's not Adam B'Sich Adam, it's a bunch of clumper cells in the laboratory which have potential if you implant them. But if you leave them in the laboratory, they have no potential for humanhood. There's been no ensoulment left, there's been no Yetziras HaNeshama. Yetziras HaNeshama only begins if the baby's inside and about to gestate naturally, Hashem gives an neshama. But outside in a laboratory, there's been no ensoma, there's no neshama given to the baby yet. So if that's the case, there's no destruction, no death taking place, not only for B'nai Yisrael, but even for B'nai Noach. The only time the shela of abortion begins is a machlokes, if the gestation took place in the body and the baby's already connected to the uterine wall, that's when the machlokes, whether it's abortion or not, basically kicks in. I once had a discussion, as I mentioned before, with a Roman Catholic priest, a big scholar in the church, and I said to him, don't you realize that based upon biblical law, after what I told him, I gave him a little shear upon this, I said, don't you realize now, based upon what I taught you, that the fact of the matter is, even according to God's divine law in the Bible, which you believe in,
a baby in a test tube in a laboratory, according even to B'nai Noach halacha, is negligible. It's nothing. And because of that, despite that, the church gave a psak that nobody who's part of that church, millions and billions of people, can take advantage of this technology because you're committing abortion to basically do the research. So they said, don't you realize the mistake of this psak, and you're denying for millions and billions of people the ability to have technology that can save their lives and make a difference for the future for themselves and their families? So they said to me, Rabbi, you've convinced me, but you have to give the lecture to the Pope. And maybe he might listen, maybe he might not listen, but I can't change the law, but I hear what you're saying, and I hear the cogency of the argument, and he understood what I was telling him. So with this, I want to now segue and ask Dr. Reichman to come up to continue the lecture. You now understand why the destruction of the blastocyst inside is not a shayla of an abortion, and when we were asked the shayla whether or not, when many, many years ago, I was part of a commission from the RCA and OU that were asked to write for President Bush a little summary of what Judaism holds when it comes to stem cell research, because he was that type of guy that even though he was a Christian and he knew what the church paskened, he wanted to know what everybody else held to see if he could be lenient in any way based upon other religions to try to accommodate them. So at that time, the OU and RCA was asked to write a little brief. I was one of the people that was asked. I was given the honor to be ones to write this. And basically what we said to him is that according to Judaism, there is no ease of abortion when the baby's in a test tube in a laboratory, and that's why we hold, not only are you allowed to do stem cell embryonic research, but since it's going to facilitate basically causing cures of a disease to be created, it comes under mitzvah rapi rapi, it comes under mitzvah kibush olam, conquering the technology of the world to save human life, and that's the psak we gave him, that's the psak we left him with. It did cause Bush on some level to have certain leniencies to look the opposite way when it comes to certain things, but nevertheless, what I want to point out to you is that according to Allah, for Jews and for non-Jews, there should be no reason to answer it based upon what I taught you today. Dr. Reichman, it's all yours.
Tremendous yishkayach to Rabbi Flaum. It's always a tremendous chus to speak with Rabbi Flaum, who presents things so lucidly, very complex area of halacha, as you've now been able to appreciate. Birshus HaRabbanim, my objective for the next few minutes is the following. You heard an extraordinary discourse about what halacha has to say about abortion, about stem cell research. I'm going to bring you into the 21st century and address some of the latest advances, challenges to the concept of abortion in the 21st century, which Gedolim in previous generations had not even thought of. And the law is going to have to be applied in new ways to these kinds of technologies. We're going to discuss abortion briefly and stem cell research briefly and share with you some of the recent developments and how the halachas that Rabbi Flaum so beautifully described will need to be reapplied to some of these new circumstances. We begin on page one of your handout. I ask you to please take the smaller size handout. Under the heading Abortion, Changes to the Timing. Now, Rabbi Flaum discussed this very important halachic distinction of 40 days in respect to the issue of stem cell research. But it also has potential applications to abortion itself, as we'll see presently. In the recent past, the only way abortion could be performed, usually when abortion would be performed in a halachic context, a potential halachic context, is if it was determined that the fetus was suffering from some significant handicap or significant debility. Once one would determine that fact, then the shaila was, in the 1970s and the 1980s, if you will use Tay-Sachs as our classic example in the history of halachic literature, was it permitted to perform an abortion, was it not? And with Tzitz Eliezer, who was Somech on the Chavis Yoyer, and the Ma'arit said yes, and the Rav Moshe Feinstein said, Zatzal said no. And in one of the tshuvos, which Rabbi Flaum mentioned, on the right-hand side is the Tzitz Eliezer. If you look in the underlying section of the Tzitz Eliezer, it says, Yesh lahader, la'asos pe'ula hefsek yahi rayon. If one is permitted to perform an abortion, which according to him, it was permitted in limited circumstances, im tzrichim lekach, mibchina refuit, lifnei, arboim yom meahirayon. Da'azai kil hadover bahar bios lifnei mem yom hua ibur adayin b'china shamayi ba'almum. So the Tzitz Eliezer said, if you're going to perform an abortion, you should try and do it before 40 days. What's the problem? The problem is that in medicine, it has never been possible to ascertain that a child has any defect before 40 days of gestation. So it's really an irrelevant point, or has been a historically irrelevant point. In fact, however, this point may not be so irrelevant today. Why is that? Because if you look on your hand down the upper left-hand side, the conventional ways to determine the genetics of a child have been chorionic villus sampling and amniocentesis, which I suspect many of you are familiar with at least one of these procedures. These procedures require a needle inside the abdomen of the woman to remove tissue, to send that tissue to the lab to determine if the child, for our illustration purposes, is suffering from Tay-Sachs disease, rahmanal litzlan. However, these tests were not able to be performed successfully and safely until far beyond the 40-day period. Now, it's important to realize, just a small parenthesis, 40 days in the halachic discussion is different from 40 days in the secular world. When they say 40 days in the secular world, the counting starts from the last menstrual period. In halacha, it counts from conception. So you have to it's not a minor side point, it's an important side point, and in these issues, literally every day makes a difference. There is a new technology, which is not science fiction anymore. It is available, it is being used in major centers, it is being refined, and that is what's called fetal cell sorting. And how many people here have ever heard of that term? Anybody here familiar with this term? Here is what fetal cell sorting is. Fantastic technology. In this technology, they can isolate from the maternal blood supply, with literally just a blood sample, cells that have migrated from the fetus into the maternal circulation. Now, we have always been taught in basic biology that the fetus circulation is separate from the mother's circulation. They generally don't mix. And that's generally true. But literally, a handful of cells can migrate from the fetal circulation into the mother's blood supply, where you can take a needle, pull out a sample of blood, and you'll be able to identify fetal cells, or at least partial fetal cells, or fetal cell DNA from that blood supply, which is an amazing thing. And it's amazing for two important points. Point number one is, and just share with you, when you're able to identify that fetal cell DNA, so the earliest that scientists have been able to identify it now is 37 days after embryo transfer. So it's very close to that 40-day mark. In practicality, they don't do fetal cell sorting till a number of weeks later than that. It's just easier to do. But it will be possible, God willing, in the not-too-distant future, to use this fetal cell sorting to identify DNA from the fetus in a stage earlier than 40 days. If that does become possible, that will radically change the landscape of the halachic abortion discussion. And all these poskim who side with the Tzitz Eliezer will now have a massive knockings at their door for halachic discussion about the permissibility of abortion before 40 days. Right now, it is really not physiologically possible, so it's not so halachically relevant. If you look on the bottom of this handout number 2, this procedure is not only helpful in terms of timing, this procedure is helpful in terms of risk. So even, and by the way, this is not for lengthy discussions now, right now, fetal cell sorting only is able to identify a few major diseases, a few chromosomal abnormalities, including Down syndrome and a few other genetic abnormalities. But another key factor here, and one of the reasons why Poskim forbade in some circumstances tests like amniocentesis and chorionic villus sampling, is because those tests require a needle into the womb of the mother, and a small percentage of cases will actually induce abortion, will induce a miscarriage. So you're trying to find out whether the baby's healthy, and God forbid you're going to put a needle into the abdomen, you're actually going to induce a miscarriage. It's going to defeat the entire purpose. With fetal cell sorting, there is no harm whatsoever to the fetus. You're not putting a needle anywhere near the fetus. You're simply taking a blood sample from the mother. So that has an amazing advance in the 21st century. If you turn the page, other areas where there have been changes to the field of abortion, and these changes are going to be greater and greater as time proceeds, changes to the reasons why abortion would be considered, why a couple would consider an abortion. Now, back in the 1970s, 1980s, the very first test that was identifiable in the fetus in utero, there was only one at that time, and that was Tay-Sachs. And all the halachic literature for decades talked about Tay-Sachs, and nothing else. If you look at your handout in the upper left-hand side, I have to shrink it. This is a list of genetic conditions that if you go to a major medical center to test for Jewish genetic diseases, this is the list that they will test. Dozens upon dozens, roughly 100, up to 100 things that they can test for, which means there's 100 things that you could potentially want to have an abortion for. So there's a tremendous increase in the potential for the desire to have an abortion, and the halachic challenges to poskim in terms of when it's permitted, when it's not permitted. Not our major discussion today, really just to share with you the challenges for the next for this coming generation. In addition, there's another extraordinary development which will increase the desire to have abortion even more, and that is the ability to test not only a few things for the fetus in utero, but in the upper left-hand side, you have here an article, non-invasive prenatal testing to perform fetal whole genome sequencing. Now, let me just clarify this for you. You may be familiar with the fact that it's possible to test the whole human genome. We live in really an extraordinary age, and a subject for another talk is the application of the Human Genome Project and its halachic ramifications. So it is now used to cost, I think the first human DNA that was sequenced cost, I don't know how many hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. Today, you can go to the laboratory and get it done for under $1,000. Anyone in this room can go and get their entire human genome tested. But the chiddush now is that it now may be possible, and this is real cutting-edge research, has not been clinically applicable yet, but again, probably will be in the near future, to extrapolate the human genome sequencing of the fetus in utero. Now, it's not done by a direct sequencing. It's done by a combination of DNA from the fetus and the maternal DNA and the paternal DNA. The details are not so relevant. But the scientists can infer the entire human genome of your fetus. Now, what does that mean? Now, imagine the information now. We have information overload in the generation that we live. Imagine the information overload now. You go to the doctor, you're pregnant, and the doctor says, well, let's do a genome sequencing of your fetus. Here are 8,462 diseases that we have identified. Your child has a predisposition for 50 of them. Your child has no predisposition for 150 of them. And then your child has genes of unknown clinical significance, 250 genes of unknown clinical significance. Right? So what are you going to do with all this information? So the point here is that, and this is just a brief tangent which is relevant to every halachic discussion we're going to have probably for the foreseeable future. We live in an age when we are amassing an immense amount of information, more so than ever in the history of mankind, exponentially higher. The problem is we don't know what to do with all this information. So you will literally get a text from the laboratory of a scientist across the globe as he just completed a very interesting discovery. The problem is, it'll take us decades to find out if that discovery has any clinical relevance. But we are now shouldered with this information of its potential relevance. And we don't know what the heck to do with it, to be honest. So we are living in this continual chasm where we have an immense amount of information, but don't really know what to do with it. And that's the status of this whole human genome testing for the fetus. Now, if you're a non-Jew and you're not really concerned about abortion, and the doctor tells you, you know, you have these 20 genes of unknown clinical significance, they might mean your child will die in 10 years, or they might mean your child will be a genius, we don't even know. So most of these people, or many of these people, are going to say, why would I take a risk? Let's just abort. So it's really, and in the New England Journal, I was really surprised to see, a group of ethicists from Harvard suggested that all women should have this information, because the more information, the better. I don't necessarily agree with that. But what's fascinating also is the other edge, the other side of this coin, in the bottom of page 2. Just as there are more reasons to consider abortion in the 21st century for many genetic diseases, which are incurable diseases, also on the horizon is the tremendous potential for curing genetic diseases. So these diseases for which one would consider abortion, and maybe all poskim who side with the Tzitz Eliezer would consider abortion for Tay-Sachs and diseases that would be in the category of Tay-Sachs, it might very well be that some of these, until today, uncurable diseases will become curable in our lifetimes. And the technology that some of you may have been reading over the last literally few weeks to months is here on your handout on the bottom of this page, called Engineering the Perfect Baby. The technology is called CRISPR. I forget what the acronym stands for. Anyone here even hear of CRISPR? Just for my knowledge. So we have a handful of people that have heard of the technology CRISPR. Here's the basic idea for those of you who don't have any understanding of molecular biology, and I'm probably one of them as well. In essence, it's a scissors. They basically decide where in the DNA sequence they can target with certain enzymes to literally snip it out and theoretically allow certain DNA to replace it. So all these things that we understand to be genetically problematic, for example, Tay-Sachs disease, the BRCA gene, in theory, this technology, and from what scientists say, it's not even such complex or expensive technology, they can literally snip out these bad genes and replace them with good genes. Kind of like a gene transplant. So if that's the case, all these things which we were performing, so we discussed Tay-Sachs, so even the Tzitz Eliezer said you could abort for Tay-Sachs, you know, in the time that he lived, might say today, well, maybe you shouldn't abort for Tay-Sachs because maybe we can genetically cure Tay-Sachs. And there may be no need for us to do such a thing. And one example here from November 6th, just a few days ago, gene editing has saved the life of a girl with incurable leukemia. So this is not science fiction. And on the second page, page 3, the risks of assisting evolution, this is from November 10th from the New York Times. Sorry, I couldn't get you anything any more recent than this. Researchers are creating genetically modified organisms at an unprecedented pace. This biotechnological revolution is moving so fast, it hasn't yet fully filtered into the public's awareness or policymakers' oversight. So this CRISPR technology, you will surely be hearing a lot more about in the very near future, and will definitely have an impact on the halachic permissibility of performing abortion for diseases that will become, Yirtzeh Hashem, curable diseases. At the bottom of page 3, back again, to use our illustration of the Tay-Sachs condition. So back in the 70s, if a couple were known to be both carriers for Tay-Sachs, the only option they had at that time was to become pregnant naturally, to perform amniocentesis on the child, and then to undergo the tremendous tsar of deciding to abort or not to abort. Fast forward into the 21st century, there is now another extremely important option for these couples, and this is not science fiction, this is Maisim B'chol Yom today, and that is called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. And I apologize I keep doing this, but it's important for my knowledge also. How many people here have heard of pre-implantation genetic diagnosis? So more hands go up for that than for CRISPR, which was a much, much newer technology. This is the technology on page 3. This is a picture of it. In essence, what they do is they fertilize the egg and the sperm in the laboratory, allow it to grow to the 8-cell stage, and this is what you're looking at, an 8-cell embryo. And then in the laboratory, they extract one cell from that 8-cell embryo and send it to the laboratory to identify every known genetic condition today. Obviously, they can determine the gender of the child. Interesting halachic shilas about doing a PGD, it's called, for gender selection, to do it for to create a child that can be a donor to another child. It's called the savior sibling. All these kinds of interesting halachic shilas. But surely, you could do such a thing to determine if you have a family where both are carriers, to determine if the embryo has Tay-Sachs or not, and you could not implant any embryo that's afflicted with Tay-Sachs. So that is an extraordinary option for couples that are known to be carriers, both carriers of Tay-Sachs or any other recessive genetic disease. You can perform PGD, and you can isolate the embryos that are free from disease. You could implant those embryos and circumvent the entire halachic shaila of abortions, only in the 21st century. Another fascinating development. And with this, we'll close the section on abortion. We'll move briefly to a discussion of stem cells. And this one is really science fiction, at least at this stage, but they anticipate the possibility of its coming to fruition, hopefully within the next decade or so. And that is called ectogenesis. And this is something Rabbi Flaum actually alluded to in his discussion. The scientists are now experimenting. You have here on page 4 on the left-hand side, "Welcome to the world of the Matrix. The artificial womb exists. In Tokyo, researchers have developed a technique called EUFI, extrauterine fetal incubation," which means, in essence, that scientists are working on the possibility of taking a fetus and growing the fetus entirely outside the womb from conception to complete development. Now notice I didn't say birth, because there is no birth when it's born by ectogenesis. You pluck it out at the end of the 6 months, at the end of the 9 months. But this ectogenesis could have profound halachic ramifications for many things, including, obviously, the issue of abortion. So, for example, the Maharit, who holds that it's the prohibition of abortion is an isser of chavala, of wounding the woman, and ties that into uber yerech imo, you know, the fetus is an integral part of the mother. Here, uber is not yerech imo, uber is yerech test tube. You know, here the uber is connected to the test tube. There is no mother. There is no mother that it's connected to. So maybe the Maharit would say there's no isser of abortion in this case. I'm sorry? Right, so then the kasha is, which is for another fascinating discussion, how do you define humanity? How do you define what a human being is? So the Chacham Tzvi says, and others say, that the definition of a human being is, as Shakespeare said, the man of woman born. So this child would not be born from a woman. This child would be born from a test tube. So maybe you could grow people by ectogenesis and sacrifice them and take their parts for organ donation. That's a theoretical possibility. As we turn the page, so those are some of the interesting developments that will change the landscape of abortion significantly. As we move to the issue of stem cells, Rabbi Flaum gave a fantastic shiur about stem cell research. In essence, was matir stem cell research. According to the majority of poskim today would agree that that stem cell research is permitted from embryonic stem cells. But it's possible now to create stem cells that have that same tremendous ability medically and scientifically without even using the embryo. And they are called induced pluripotent stem cells. So the term is not so important, but the technology is absolutely fascinating. So if you look on the upper left-hand side of page 5, you will see stem cells in the middle of this illustration, and as you look on the bottom, you see the stem cells can produce nerve cells and heart cells and blood cells, etc. But a scientist in Japan has figured out a way, I mean this is really, and he actually won the Nobel Prize for this research, has figured out a way to take a regular adult cell, this is not somatic transfer, this is a regular adult cell, and inject certain enzymes in that cell, which will allow that cell, in essence, to be converted to a cell similar to an embryonic stem cell. And with this technology, you basically circumvent the whole embryo shiloh altogether. And scientists are working on this. So it is possible that while stem cell research is still in the textbook of the medical halachic literature, it is possible that the whole halachic discussion about stem cell research will be relegated to the history of medical halacha, because it'll be a moot point, because you won't even need to harvest stem cells from the embryo anymore. You can create stem cells from regular cells. But if you look at some of the extraordinary uses for stem cells, here's a cartoon, one of my favorite cartoons on the bottom right of this page 5. This is the mother stem cell talking to the baby stem cell. It says, "You want to be a brain cell, you have to study. You goof off, you'll end up in the rectum." So if you look in the bottom left-hand side, you will see this isn't even a whole list, an exhaustive list, some of the uses of stem cells. Now, not for our discussion tonight, but all the research that you ever hear on the news about stem cell could either be from embryonic stem cells, or from these so-called induced pluripotent stem cells, or from stem cells that come from fetuses, or from another type of stem cell, which we didn't discuss tonight, which is called an adult stem cell. And an adult stem cell is a stem cell which all of us have. We all have stem cells in our bone marrow, we all have stem cells in our hearts, we all have stem cells in our brains. And scientists are using those stem cells in addition to perform a lot of this research to potentially cure diseases like Parkinson's disease, like diabetes, etc., etc. And as we turn to the last page, page 6, and it will close in the next few moments, one of the exciting frontiers which Rabbi Flaum asked me to address this evening is the use of stem cells for organ transplantation. Organ transplantation, a major halachic issue. And one of these technologies is as follows. Right now, if someone receives a heart transplant, they have to, or any transplant, they have to take medication in order to prevent their body from rejecting it. It's called immunosuppressive medication. What's the problem? The problem is if I take immunosuppressive medication, it not only suppresses my ability to reject the organ, it suppresses my ability to fight the common cold. So you can literally succumb to common infections when you're on immunosuppressive medication. So you have to be extremely cautious. I mean, Baruch Hashem, it's a great thing. But wouldn't it be exciting and extraordinary if you could get a transplant and not have to take immunosuppressive medications? How do you do such a thing? Take, for example, this is just one variation on that. In the middle of your handout on the left is a picture of an organ. It's a human organ. Do you know what organ that is? Anybody want to guess that? It's the trachea. It's the human trachea. So this woman needed a tracheal transplant, not exactly your most common transplant. What do? They harvested the cartilage, or the trachea, from a corpse, from a someone who had passed away, who had donated their organs. They literally stripped the entire trachea of the cellular material. They took this woman's own stem cells and layered it on top of this trachea and grew these stem cells over a few days and weeks period so that the entire trachea was covered with this woman's own stem cells and then transplanted that into this woman. She did not and has not needed to take immunosuppressive medication since the time of that transplant. Now you could apply this to many different things also. You could do it with a heart, you can do it with a liver, you can do it with a kidney, the same concept. And just to share with you literally the real cutting edge and exciting material, and this is from November 9th of 2015. Again, I'm sorry I couldn't get you anything any more recent. Scientists have found a way to 3D print embryonic stem cell building blocks. Now, how many people here own a 3D printer? Anybody? Does the shul yet, the rabbi, own a 3D printer? So 3D printing is all the rage. But 3D printing has found a tremendous use in the fields of medicine. One of its classic uses is for surgeons that are doing complex facial surgeries or separating Siamese twins. They will create 3D models based on MRI imaging so the surgeons can see exactly what they will be operating on before they operate on it. That's one of the classic examples. They're actually thinking of doing MRI scans on all soldiers before they go to the military, so that if, God forbid, they get some problem with their bone, they can do a 3D recreation of the bone that they were lost and reimplant that bone. I mean, this is the godless that we're talking about. But one of the things that they are doing today, and if you go to these TED Talks, for those of you who have ever seen the TED Talks, and you look up 3D printed kidney, Dr. Atala down south is doing this research where he is taking stem cells and using a 3D printer to perform 3D printing of an organ such as a kidney. And while he's giving the talk, the kidney is printing in the back, and he comes out with the kidney after he finishes the talk. Now, that is not a usable kidney at this stage. But in Yirtzeh Hashem, it will become a usable kidney. They're interesting halachic shilas, by the way, about what's the tumah v'tahara status of these organs that are produced. Is a kohen metame for an organ that's produced by 3D printing? Is there a chiyuv kvura for these organs? Those are the kinds of issues. But in conclusion, we've had an opportunity here this evening to have this chus of hearing about Rabbi Flaum talk about the halachic ramifications of abortion and stem cell research, and then seeing how these halachic issues now need to be applied in the new world, in the 21st century, where we have advances in both the fields of abortion and the fields of stem cell research, which will force us to reapply some of these makoros from the previous centuries in order to be able to move forward to address these amazing technologies. Thank you so much. Anybody with questions? If anybody has questions, Rabbi Flaumann, I'll be happy to answer any questions.